Well, the Summit County Council meeting in session tomorrow at 2:30 at the Sheldon Richens Building in the studio with the preview County Manager Tom Fisher. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
You do have another closed session on property acquisition. So any word about the future of the Gilmore parcel?
Well, I mean, that's one of the things that we're working on in closed session is we're still negotiating back and forth between the EPA, some of the federal trustees that are involved with the property, U.S. Fisheries and Wildlife Service, those types of folks, state DEQ. So I think we're getting close. We're kind of bantering back and forth on final documents getting close to setting a closing date on that. But what still has to happen is a decision, a recommendation from the Administrative Control Board of the Snyderville Basin Recreation Group, and then the County Council making a final decision on whether to go forward with that closing.
Well, the property, is my understanding, going to a public hearing and possible action for a subdivision plat before the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission tonight.
Yeah, so there's a step that has to happen if as part of the closing and part of the overall set of documents that have been negotiated would be a subdivision plat that would then go into the closing documents. And it essentially divides the property between that which has levels of contamination that are outside of certain thresholds established by the EPA and those that don't. Doesn't change the zoning on the property at all. It's still rural residential. It divides the land between those two designations.
Okay, so that does have to happen before you close.
That's according to the way we've set this up, correct?
Mm-hmm. All right. So if you set one of the development lots of 125 acres as the developable property, the rest is under the purview then of the EPA?
Well, in much the same way it is today. So the EPA would still have some rights of entry onto the developable parcel just because of being able to have to get to the rest of the property out there. But other than that, it would no longer be part of the operable units that are out there.
All right. So if we leave it as rural residential, how many units could you build on 125 acres?
So that's one per 20. There has been discussions about uses out there, mostly around civic government type uses. But we're not at a step yet that we're ready to talk about that. And that would have to go through a normal process to re-subdivide a parcel if there were uses that wanted to be had on that.
Yeah. How close is this to the Silver Creek Village?
So Silver Creek Village is, I don't know, the
because this is closer to the Triangle parcel, right?
It is. It's sandwiched in between the Justice Center and the UDOT Roadshed is kind of the developable portion. And then it goes out into the meadow, extends out to the rail trail.
Okay. So, I mean, the plan, I think, eventually is to have some transit out there.
We would like to have that. I mean, one of the reasons why is because we have the Justice Center out there, and we believe that there's going to be a commercial center of some sort out there a little bit more than what exists now. Probably not enough out there at this point to contemplate transit, but in the future, we'll be looking at that.
The commercial center you're talking about is the Henry Segg parcel?
Yeah, as that application makes its way through, or, you know, whether that makes its way through or something else does, correct?
Okay. Let's see. The regular agenda includes a briefing from Tom Webb with U.S. Ski and Snowboard on the FIS World Championships event. He'll likely have stats on attendance, media exposure, things like that. From the county's perspective, how did you handle the event in terms of transit?
Well, I mean, very much working with Park City Transit, obviously the operator of the system. Because it was sandwiched right up against Sundance, it was just kind of a continuation of that service. Mm-hmm. The city, the county, Park City Transit worked together with those events leading up to it, several months leading up to it, to decide what kind of service was going to be provided. An interesting thing, because of how many venues were being operated at the same time, plus you know, the closing events of Sundance were going on at the same time as the opening events of FIS. So there was some concerns leading up to it about traffic and transportation. You know, we run large events at the canyons between the CVMA and ourselves all the time. And so we're used to that, and things went pretty smoothly or similarly to when those large events happen.
Yeah, so do we ever do that again?
Large events at the canyons?
Well, no, I mean back to back. Or did it just feel like one event?
I'm sure, you know, from a lot of different perspectives, it seemed like one event. To the event providers, obviously two events, but the nice thing is that we know we can handle these types of things. And, you know, as you contemplate larger events in the future, which would go over several days and might butt up against a Sundance event, we'll just have to be ready.
All right. Also, it looks like we've got presentations from two vendors who, my understanding, are finalists to succeed the contract with that the county has with Valley Behavioral Health.
Yeah. So an interesting bid process where we're actually, because of the magnitude of this contract, because of the role of the county council in being the authority over these types of mental health services and drug use authority as well. The county council actually needs to be part of the process of hearing these presentations. They'll hear them along with the advisory committee that's been set up to give a recommendation to the council on which firm to pick. Optum, as part of United Healthcare and the University of Utah Health Plans, are the two shortlisted finalists for this. And they cover services of outpatient care, medication management, case management, services for those incarcerated in our jail, drug court. They'll be providing services in Spanish, which is an enhancement, and then crisis services for Summit County residents themselves. So very broad things that fall under Medicaid and uninsured and the non-Medicaid Summit County residents.
So why did the county decide it wanted to change from Valley Behavioral Health?
Well, I mean, one of the biggest reasons is that the contract was coming up due in August is when the current contract runs out. Plus, we hadn't had this out to bid for 20 years. Because of a lot of changes in Medicaid over the last few years, and the availability of a broader range of clinical services under a managed care model, which is different than what we have today, we decided to put that out to bid to see if we could get enhanced services into the county.
Okay, so it sounds like the county has decided not to use Valley Behavioral Health. It's between Optum and University of Utah Health, and then the final decision's made by the county council.
It will be made by the county council, since they're the authority on those contracts.
Okay, and I'm guessing that happened. Let's see, the committee, the 10-member advisory committee, meets again on the 12th and then plans to give the county council a recommendation.
A recommendation on the 17th, and I think. I believe that the council can make a decision on that date, or they also might have it teed up for the 24th. We're kind of juggling schedules of the council right now, too. They're all going to be either present or on a video conference for the presentations on this Wednesday, and then we should have everybody back in the room for the next 2 weeks.
All right. What is the how much is the contract for?
I don't have that exact number, but it is several million dollars over several years. So it's quite a large contract. That's the other reason that it gets in front of the council under our procurement rules. When you deal with contracts of that size, they have to be involved in order to take care of that public dollar.
So Rick told me that the packet of background material looks like it's about 600 pages.
That's
he wanted
correct.
To talk to the person whose job was to boil that down so he didn't have to go through it.
Well, Aaron Newman is our resident expert on this and has put all that together, as well as kind of helping manage the committee through their deliberations on all the proposals and helping the council move through this process. So He will be introducing this topic to the council tomorrow. And I believe in looking through the packet that there are some ways certainly it's responsible to read through all of those packet materials, but there's probably some shortcuts that can be taken as well.
All right. Later on in the agenda, a franchise agreement with Utopia. This is for fiber communication lines in the county's right-of-way. This is the county's first agreement with Utopia?
I'm not sure if it's our first agreement with Utopia. I've not heard of this company before. There's fiber companies, depending on whether they're providing, cable services or other types of high-speed internet services. This one is just internet services. We don't have robust fiber in the 40 corridor. And that's what this is concentrating on. There's some businesses that would like to have faster service out there, and I'm sure that this is what that company is responding to.
Okay. The staff report says that I'm guessing they won't, or the county doesn't have to pay. They don't have to pay a franchise fee. How come?
It's
the county.
Because it's a communication service, that's my understanding. It's handled a little different. They will be paying fees in regards to permits that they have to pull in order to be in the right of way. But as far as strictly for a franchise, in order to be able to provide that service, they don't have to pay a fee.
Okay, anything else on the agenda that you wanted to mention?
Nothing really big. Actually, something that is pretty big. We've got a 25-year employee that's retiring out of the sheriff's office. She's provided just great service to the county and to the sheriff's office, and we want to recognize that. We started doing this last year, and it's always great to hear the stories from those that have served that many years for the public.
Okay, I wanted to ask you now, now that Dakota Pacific owns the Boyer property, the tech park, has the county had any contact from this? This group asking about possibly amending that development agreement?
We have. So staff has met with Dakota Pacific a couple of times. Some of that contact was before they even purchased the property, as they were trying to do some of their due diligence. Since then, we've met with folks that Dakota Pacific has hired to contemplate what kind of uses they'd like to propose out there. But when it comes down to it, we have to see an application before we can give any real judgment or information out there. And of course, that judgment first is left up to the Planning Commission. So I think we'll see something like that fairly soon. I'm not sure of what their schedule is, but probably within the next few months.
Well, then the county must have given them some sort of idea that there would be some flexibility as opposed to a strict tech park.
Well, no, we can't give any kind of judgment on that because they have to have an application in before we really do that. What sometimes might be confusing is that there's also the Kimball Junction neighborhood plan that's making its way through the process at the same time. And I'm quite certain that the Dakota Pacific folks are watching that process happen. That's going to be in front of the council very soon in a joint session with the Planning Commission. Planning Commission has taken a look at that already and has given a recommendation to the council. That might give some information, and of course it covers all of the Kimball Junction area, not just the 50 or so acres of the tech park. That's probably what's being talked about at this point.
Yeah, as I recall, though, former council seemed amenable to easing up on some of the regulations. I mean, do we share that with this council?
Well, I mean, I'm going to let the council talk about that one. But the councils of the past or even commissions have talked to different landowners, mostly the Boyer Company, obviously, because they've owned it for the longest period of time, about use changes. There haven't been any in the recent past. But, you know, as a new landowner, I'm sure they'll want to enter into those conversations as well.
Okay, Tom, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
That's Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. 8:33 now. Good morning. Well, tomorrow's free lunchtime learning at the PC Mark features the founder of East West, Reagan Archibald, who will talk about stem cell therapy for pain. He joins me now on the phone. Good morning.
Hey, good morning.
So it takes place tomorrow from noon to one in the party room there at the Mark. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Reagan, and your background. Are you're not an MD?
No, we've got Dr. John Lawrence. He's our MD on the team, and I'm the founder of East West Health. I'm a licensed acupuncturist and a functional medicine practitioner, but I do have extensive training in stem cell therapy. I've been researching it and implementing it into our various locations throughout Utah for about 7 years.
All right. So tell us a little bit about how stem cell therapy works.
Well, if you think about how your body breaks down on a cellular level, some of the things that replace those damaged cells are what we call stem cells. So they're the master cell in your body. And so if a lot of people who come to these events, they have issues with their knees, they have osteoarthritis, bone on bone, they're told they need either a knee replacement or a surgical operation. And so what regenerative medicine and stem cell therapy has been proven to do is to regenerate some of the damaged tissue and cells in the actual joint. And so stem cells are a way of regenerating what's been lost.
And whose stem cells do you use?
So in most cases, we do a variety of regenerative medicine therapies, anywhere from ozone to PRP. Platelet-rich plasma is where we use the person's own platelet-rich source of blood, and there are fragments of stem cells there, but primarily we use stem cells derived from the umbilical cord. They're all healthy local Utah mothers who donate their birth tissue, and we use a local lab to source our stem cells.
Okay, so there's no danger of any kind of transfer of some kind of blood-borne disease or anything?
You know, that is one of the concerns I had. I've had this procedure done several times, but there's not. If you look at the birth tissue, it's actually an immune-privileged environment. And so some of the typical proteins or antigens, like human leukocyte antigen that your body would perceive as a threat, are not existent in the perinatal tissue. So there's no risk of a what's called a host versus graft reaction. Very safe overall, and everything we do it does follow, and the lab we use does follow the FDA guidelines as far as tissue reference guidelines. They follow those very very in much detail.
So, again, putting somebody else's stem cells in my knee helps with my knee pain just by regenerating the tissue there?
Yeah, so what happens is if you put young stem cells, and these aren't somebody else's, this is birth tissue that typically would get thrown away, and so it's kind of this beautiful matrix of not only are there stem cells, but there's signaling factors, exosomes that are naturally released from these stem cells. There are proteins like the TIMP2 protein has been identified in the birth tissue to be able to regenerate vascular supply. There's also a protein called MMP9, and MMP9 can help break up some of the scar tissue that can build up in the knees or in the back or in the shoulders or the discs. And so there are more. It's multifaceted. It's not just the stem cells alone in the birth tissue, but what happens is when that new life or these new cells get introduced into an environment that's has had the impacts of aging, it brings new life into the area. It's same type of life that allowed us to develop in our mother's womb.
So, how successful is the treatment?
You know, it's it's a case-by-case basis. We have a very high success rate, but we believe that in order to have the most success, there's three criteria that need to be met. First, we want to help a person get as healthy as possible, so we do run functional blood chemistry labs on each patient who gets treated from us, and that helps facilitate the overall effectiveness. We also provide follow-up care. That's where ozone therapy can help clean up the tissue and get it more prepared for better stem cell growth. And then PRP is a way of fertilizing the stem cells once they are transplanted into whatever area we're treating. But we see that patients who also follow our nutritional protocols, they make the correct lifestyle changes, we see over a 90% success rate in our outcomes.
Wow. How expensive is it?
You know, it really depends. If somebody just wants us to do something that facilitates stem cell growth, like maybe ozone therapy or PRP, it could be a few hundred dollars. And then if someone does like our whole body makeover, that can be, or our longevity treatment, where we treat the skin, we do the face, we treat the hair, we do all the joints that have been damaged in the body, that can be upwards of around $25,000.
My, okay. Is it covered by insurance?
Insurance does not cover a service like this.
Okay. Well, you will be available to answer everybody else's questions. Again, that's tomorrow at the PC Mark from noon to 1. Anything else you'd like to mention, Reagan?
No. I just really appreciate the community here in Park City. It's been a pleasure being able to serve the community over the last 5 years. And thank you for having me on.
Thank you. That's, again, Reagan Archibald, founder of East West Health. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, recently, Park City Police watch logs have reflected a number of incidents where police have interacted with people experiencing homelessness. Here to discuss homeless outreach and services in Park City, I have Park City Police Captain Phil Kirk, along with Kendra Lukrich with the Christian Center of Park City. Good morning, both of you.
Good morning, Leslie.
So, Phil, we've noticed police encountering people in transit centers, public restrooms, vans, and parking garages after hours, people who are presumed to be homeless. What is the extent of the problem that the police are seeing?
Well, it's become more of a year-round problem. You know, we've had homeless camps in the open space, Prospector Hill, and over the years. But now I think we're seeing these homeless folks during the winter time, because it's so cold and there's so much snow this last year, they're now migrated to downtown locations such as the ones you mentioned, especially the transit center. And so I don't know if there's any more cases. It's just that they're more kind of visible because they're in places where other people are also doing their business, and then we get more complaints and more calls about them.
Hmm. I mean, if you were to put a number on it, could you?
That's pretty mushy there, but we've seen some of the same individuals year after year, and we try to do our best we can in providing them resources. Many of them don't want to take advantage of it, but if they do, the Christian Center is a terrific resource for them because they provide food, clothing, and assistance with shelter, and work, and all those things that these folks need.
Yeah, I'll let Kendall talk a little bit more about that. But when we hear about the homeless spending their days in the city library or riding the bus, how are police trained then to deal with those situations?
Well, we have a couple of different trainings that we provide our officers. And we have one, I should mention, officer that's a specialist, and he's the homeless liaison, Dan Cherkis. And he's been terrific at keeping track of the individuals that need help and trying to get them lined up with that help. And he's developed brochures to help provide them the resource information that is available here. And I'll tell you, one of the partnerships we have is with the homeless shelter in Salt Lake City, because we don't have a shelter here. But we do provide them transportation down to the shelter if that's what they'd like. To be honest with you, none of them have taken us up on our offer, though. And so, but we do train our individuals through CIT, different types of training to deal with individuals that are experiencing crisis in their life or they're homeless. Many of these individuals have mental health issues. They have obviously employment issues that they are dealing with, and sometimes substance abuse. What concerns us most, Leslie, is when they're in the open space, especially in the summertime, that they're building campfires, and that presents a real fire hazard. Plus, their human waste that they have to dispose of, and the impact onto the natural ecology in the open space too.
Yeah. So when you, as you mentioned, we don't have an emergency shelter, but when you find folks who don't have a home and you evict them from wherever they are, the transit center or the van in the parking garage, I mean, do police then follow through to make sure they have a place to go where they won't be cold?
Well, that's a challenge because they don't want our assistance in that. We do offer, again, a ride to the homeless shelter in Salt Lake City if they want to go that route and get them immediate shelter. We refer them with resource list if it's after hours to the places like the Christian Center. But we can't force them to do those kinds of things. Sometimes, to be honest with you, they are trespassing on private property. Our usual approach to dealing with that is to warn them several times, and then if they continue to violate that, then we will cite them.
And they certainly don't have the means then to do that. I mean, I guess why bother?
I'm sorry.
I mean, if you were to charge somebody with that, I mean, they don't have the means to pay off a citation. And what's the point?
Yeah, that it's another kind of vicious cycle there with these individuals that they don't have. Some of them are working individuals. We've had individuals that prefer to live in a homeless camp or a camp up in the mountains, even though they have employment. Because they don't want to spend the money, the high cost of housing here, so they want to, and plus they love living in the wilderness. So there are a few of those individuals too.
Yeah. So Kendall, you interact with people experiencing homelessness as a caseworker there. We know winter isn't friendly to the homeless, especially this winter. I mean, with so much snow. Why do we see people in Park City during the winter that are homeless?
Well, I think, you know, some of those people have been here and they've refused services, and so they stick around. I mean, they're, like it's been mentioned, you know, we do have folks who've been homeless for years who are homeless by choice and who refuse services and find places to take care of themselves.
So do you have their stories? I mean, have they come up from Salt Lake or somewhere else? Or
I think some, you know, I'm fairly new to the Christian Center, so the homeless population is fairly new to me. I used to work with Valley Behavioral Health, so I am familiar with the mental health issues that these folks face. And I think, you know, there are some who are transient and then they decide to stay. Mm-hmm. And then there are others who, you know, for whatever reason, loss of job, addiction, sometimes, you know, their family breaks up and they have nowhere to go. And so, you know, that's what I'm hoping to deal with as a case manager is, you know, really work with these folks long term, try to get them hooked up with mental health services and, you know, get them back into the workforce if possible. And, you know, find out what their stories are because, you know, homelessness is not just these people who are, you know, at these camps and who are sleeping on the benches. I mean, homelessness also refers to families who've been evicted for, you know, maybe medical bills that they haven't been able to pay because of a family member who is sick. And so those are the people also who we work with. And, you know, and the police force is really, really helpful in terms of collaborating with helping all of these folks, you know.
Yeah. So does the Christian Center have some kind of hotel voucher program where, I mean, on a really cold night that you would be able to bring them somewhere?
We do have funds through our emergency assistance program that we can use for, we have shower vouchers. We have, we can also help, you know, somebody stay in a motel for, you know, a night or two. You know, that it's kind of a Band-Aid. It doesn't really help, you know, long term. But yes, to if they are willing, we can help them in that way as well.
Yeah, we certainly, though, have a better network of services in the Salt Lake Valley. I mean, do we send them off with bus fare or something to try and get them to one of those shelters?
Yeah, and so we do, we can pay for Greyhound to take them to the Valley. Or sometimes, you know, people have been homeless and decide, okay, it's time to go home. And we can get them home on Greyhound long distance as well.
Hmm. And I asked Captain Kurt, though, in terms of numbers, I mean, could you put a number on it at all?
Honestly, I can't. And it is fluctuating, you know. I mean, there are some who, some individuals who are here, you know, for years, and who the police force and we deal with on a regular basis, who, you know, just by choice, they are in their situation. We try to help them as best as we can and encourage them to go into shelters. And but no.
Yeah. So you find them as a result of the police work? I mean, they don't necessarily find you.
Oh, no, we're known to some of them, and they come, they use our food pantry, they come in, you know, if they need some hygiene supplies, and, you know, and I really want, as the new case manager, to really reach out to those individuals when they do come in and try to spend some time, if they're willing to see, you know, if we can help them more than that, and you know, get them into treatment if they need that, or see if they could possibly get some kind of employment to work towards housing.
And Phil, do you expect to see a kind of a bump up now that things are warming up? Is that traditionally what happens?
Well, I think we'll see more movement into the open space and Prospector Hill and setting up campsites there. One thing I did want to mention too is besides the Christian Center, our officers have a lot of compassion for these individuals too, and are dealing with them time and time again. And people like Franco Libertini and other patrol officers, they've actually bought them meals, and because they're really concerned about their being able to survive, especially during the cold winters. And so we do see acts of kindness by our officers trying to help. It's a tough situation, and especially if they don't want our help, some of them don't. They just want us to kind of leave them alone. And you know, we're responding to calls from the community members saying, hey, these people are asleep in our business, they're trespassing, and so we need to take some action, but in a compassionate way.
Okay. Anything else you guys would like to say?
No.
Okay. Again, thanks for your time. That's Park City Police
Thank you,
Captain
Melissa.
Phil
Thank
Kirk
you for
and
having us.
Kendall Lukrich with the Christian Center of Park City. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. It's 8:52 now. Good morning. Well, the PC Mark presents Wellness Week next week, April 15th through the 19th. In the studio with a rundown of what's happening, I have Recreation Coordinator Cole Johnson. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you.
Yeah, so what is Wellness Week?
Wellness Week we put on at the PC Mark. It's a semi-annual event. We put it on in the spring and the fall, and we basically just put on a week with every day we have something different wellness happening. So different speakers, different events, different vendors will come in, and every day of the week is something a little bit different. So
okay, well, you're kicking it off Monday with a blood drive.
Yep. So American Red Cross will be here on Monday. They're going to be here from 1 to 6 with a blood drive. They pull their big blood mobile bus, they call it up, and we park it in the parking lot. You can make an appointment through the PC Mark or as well online at American Red Cross website there. Or you can come just drop in as well. But like I said, they'll be here from 1 to 6.
Okay. And then on Tuesday, Dr. Black will be doing free spinal screenings. Looking for what in particular?
It's just basically if you're interested, if you're in the area and you want to just get a quick check, if you've got any pain, if you'd like a doctor to just look, Dr. Black with Center of Team Healthcare will be here from 11 to 2. It's just first come, first serve basis. We'll have a private room set up, and you can just get a quick rundown from the doctor if you'd like.
Okay. And then Wednesday, the health fair. This is where several people come in?
Yep, exactly. So the health fair will be right there in the PC Mark lobby. We'll have different health fair vendors. You know, East West Health will be there. PC Tennis will be there. Summit County Health will be there. So great opportunity to come by, get some information about some local vendors in the community.
Okay. And then on Thursday, an hour-long fitness and BMI testing. This is something you guys run, huh?
Yep. So this is one that we offer in-house. It's a really basic fitness and BMI test. Anyone looking to kind of establish some new fitness goals, this kind of establishes a baseline for yourself to just kind of, you know, get going on the right foot, and kind of gives you a good area so we can basically test you now, and then we could test you again in 3 weeks. We could test you again in 6 months, and just kind of track your progress.
As I recall, it wasn't that simple. I was like running a mile and doing some push-ups.
It is. It's a couple push-ups, it's a couple sit-ups, and then it's a mile and a half run. But it's completely and 100% at your own pace. It's all just for your own information, for your own baseline.
Okay, and then you're going to end it up with diabetes prevention education.
Yep, so on Friday, Summit County Health will be coming and just doing a brief talk on diabetes prevention and education, looking at some risk factors, some certain things that people can do prevention-wise as well.
Okay, so this would be kind of like your lunch and learn?
Yep, exactly.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Are they going to be doing glucose testing or anything like that?
Nothing like that. This one's just going to be strictly informational-based, but like I said, anyone, you know, diabetes is huge, and, you know, anything you can do as far as risk factors and prevention is awesome, so.
Okay. Everything's free and open to the public, even those who don't have a pass to the mark?
Absolutely, yep. Yep, all are welcome.
Okay. And then this is all online, I'm guessing, if somebody wanted the rundown.
Yep, parkcityrecreation.org.
Okay, anything else?
That's it.
Okay, thanks, Cole.
Thank you, Leslie.
That's Cole Johnson with the PC Mark. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW.